From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know. A production of iHeartRadio.
Hello, welcome back to the show. My name is Matt.
My name is Noel.
They call me Ben. We are joined, as always, with our super producer, Alexis, codename Doc Holliday Jackson. Most importantly, you are you. You are here. And that makes this the stuff they don't want you to know. This podcast is brought to you in part by Sears, without their consent. It is time for our weekly listener mail segment. This one I am especially excited for because it is going to be pretty creepy. We're going to go to some creepy things from your fellow conspiracy realist. And I've got to tell you, while we were preparing for this, we've been as open and transparent as we can about all our weird secret projects that we have going on. But as we were preparing for this, I just have to say it made my day to hear from so many people reaching out with amazing ideas, reaching out with amazing follow-ups. And you really are, maybe the end of this, the arbitrary calendrical end of the year, maybe it's making me be a little sentimental, but I thought I've just been so impressed lately by the correspondence we're getting. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. We just had so many of you do interesting things, which is probably my favorite aspect of it. And you've experienced things that are, you know, that I have never experienced. And so when you call us with a personal account, when you leave an email with a personal account, it just, it brightens all of our days because it gives us the gift of knowledge, you know, something new, which is something I think we all cherish.
The more you know, star animation icon.
That's right.
Like, think about it in concrete terms. How amazing is it that we can do multiple episodes on the amazing potential and the dangers of plastics? And we can say, hey, if you work with this firsthand, let us know. And then we have people who have written to us from those rarefied fields in very particular disciplines. So rarefied, in fact, that they have to write to us anonymously. We've also had a lot of people speak with us about the dangers of the surveillance state in which the majority of humanity lives.
And money laundering in the art world.
Yes.
All kinds of stuff.
I'm telling you, fart is the future.
I am a bad person.
For 15%.
I don't understand. I don't understand what's happening here.
We did a Illumination Global Unlimited, Noel, one of our longtime sponsors.
I'm a big fan. Yeah, big fan.
Big fan. We're all contractually.
Well, I fear them anyway.
But we're contractually obligated to both be big fans and fear them, I think. But the that was the only contract I had to sign in blood, now that you mention it. But we're talking about the concept of privacy, which is relatively new in its modern sense. And we're talking about the idea of surveillance. And there's something, you know, inherently creepy. I got a great message about some issues with DIY signal jammers and Ring or Nest cameras. And then, you know, it's toward the holidays now. So a lot of people, some of whom are in the audience today, probably have a little elf doll on their shelf to sort of normalize surveillance for their children, which not to date the four of us too much, but I don't think any of us grew up with that. Did you guys?
I didn't grow up with it, but my daughter did. I had to do it. And I kind of resented it being thrust upon me, to be honest, because it's yet another lie that you have to kind of like, you know, force upon your kids because they're aware of it because other kids talk about it. And it's like a book. It's at the store and stuff. So, you know, I just I don't really care for it, but mm-hmm. you know, eventually she, there's a whole deal behind it. Like, you're not allowed to touch it or its mm-hmm. magic will disappear. You know, I mean, it's the most insidious kind of lie. And you're right. We've talked about this before. It really is an enforcement of this kind of like nanny state. It's one of Santa's little agents kind of like watching you at all times. It does sort of give you a little more peek behind the curtain of how the hell Santa could possibly keep surveillance and tabs on all these kids at the same time. Cause mm-hmm. he's got these little stooges that do it for him, but yeah. you know, none of it's real.
Yeah, this sort of normalization of surveillance in someone's private home, their private like sphere. And what we found recently is a precedent for this kind of thing on an even more Orwellian level. And maybe that's where we start today. What do you think, Matt?
Yeah, let's do it. We're going to go to a message from Tall Pockets, and we will get to you in one moment, Tall Pockets. I just want to really quickly state that children, when they're in the age when they've got a cell phone, now are aware that their parents can track them to some extent, or maybe have access to things they do on that phone to some extent. I think, you know, there's no set range or age when a child can have a cell phone or use a cell phone, you know, for emergency purposes, to social media, to contacting parents and all kinds of things. But there's an age range before that, that, you know, again, not to generalize, but having a stuffed doll or a doll toy is generally before you get to cell phone level status, that age. So we're talking about that early developmental stage for many children here in this message from Tall Pockets. And for me, that's why, just as a spoiler, it's so disturbing. Okay. Tall Pockets says, "Hey guys, call me Tall Pockets if you like. Have you ever wondered what a mashup of stuff they don't want you to know and ridiculous history would look like? If Orphan Annie came face to face with spycraft, are you picturing a princess doll? Are you really? Wild. Anyway, my boyfriend and I visited the Museum of Failure tonight. Not the actual Museum of Failure, because, as it turns out, it's permanently closed. Failed? Or a brilliant business strategy. Anyway, alongside such notable gems as the Zune, New Coke, and the Monoski. I don't want to. Mm-hmm. Oh, the Monoski.
Like, yeah, as in like one ski.
Brilliant. These were complete failures. One that I never heard of, the My Friend Kayla doll, available from 2014 to 2017. This Bluetooth-enabled doll was marketed as the perfect friend. She knows all about you. She listens to you. No, that's not sinister in the least. These dolls would learn what a child said and sync it to the internet to generate responses. Great, right?
Woo, cue applause.
Yeah. So first of all, that sounds like the Google Home that was in my house as my son was growing up at a very early age, where you would just ask things, and I'm sure it knew all kinds of things, knows all kinds of things about my son. But this, in doll form, ooh, seems nefarious. So let's keep going with what, sorry, that was Matt speaking. Let's go back into what Tall Pocket says. The doll can talk about movies and shows and other toys. It records what the child says so it can maintain some semblance of a conversation. No one would ever hack this or use it to inundate kids with ads or record their conversation and sell it to companies to make more effective targeted ads. No, they would never. They did? Wow.
What?
This is so unexpected. These dolls are actually banned in Germany as they violate the German Telecommunications Act and are considered a concealed espionage device. And the Spy Museum Berlin has one on display. So we've covered listening to recording conversations, selling private data to marketing groups, and extra sneaky ad placements in the form of a convo with your BFF, Kayla. Did I miss anything? Oh, right. It's a doll. That's inherently creepy. I hope you find this as fascinating and disturbing as I did. Thank you for all the work you do. You guys always make me laugh inappropriately in the office, much to the alarm of my unassuming coworkers. And then Tall Pocket sent us several very important links that we're going to discuss today, as well as a picture of my friend, Princess Kayla.
Ooh, it's amazing what she knows.
It really is. And before we find out exactly what she knows, guys, what do you say we listen to an advertisement for this?
Yes.
This friend of ours, Miss Kayla.
Is it going to be old-timey?
No, it is not.
Too much?
No, it is not. Here we go.
Kayla knows Lily and the Pigs.
Sorry, that's the horror version. Hold on one second. Let me change that.
Kayla knows Lily and the Pigs. a baby goat called?
A baby goat is called a kid.
Kayla knows millions of things, and she plays games with you too.
You love memory match. I know your favourite pudding is strawberry cupcakes.
How does she know that?
Kayla knows so much about you. And now Kayla has a new princess look and activities.
Oh. Yay. This is like from the 90s or something? Or what is this?
No, 2014 to 2017.
Okay, I missed that. I don't like that one bit. You know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of the thing in Squid Game, the high red light, green light doll, and the little creepy song that she sings. Kind of has that vibe to it.
Absolutely.
If that doll itself knew everything about you. This is insidious. Also, full disclosure, Tall Pockets, if you are the person I'm thinking of, thank you so much for this letter, because I'm pretty sure we're friends on the internet somehow. I think Tall Pockets is onto something, and I know we all three looked into this and can confirm the story is true, but thank you so much for writing in, because I had not heard of this. I'm just not at that time in my life. Well, at any time in my life, I've just not been a guy who's particularly into dolls.
Mm. No, I get it. There's no shame in that, Ben.
Thanks, Matt.
There's all kinds of stuff that we can point to here. My favorite thing, the Tall Pocket sent us an article from the BBC News. It is titled, German Parents Told to Destroy Kayla Dolls Over Hacking Fears. It was posted in February of 2017. It's an official watchdog in Germany that had literally told all the parents out there in Germany that bought this Kayla doll to destroy them because they're dangerous, because they're hacking vulnerabilities within them that can cause them to be listening devices for nefarious folks.
Thanks.
Wow. It's pretty amazing. It's the Federal Network Agency. It's got a name that I cannot pronounce. I bet you could, Noel.
Let's see. Give it to me, Matt.
Bundesnetzagentur.
Bundesnetzagentur. That is my best college try.
So there it is, the Bundesnetzagentur, which oversees telecommunications. They're the folks who said, hey, this is a bad thing. Do not do this. But then, of course, at that time, this group called the UK Toy Retailers Association came back with, hey, y'all, this isn't a big deal. Come on, Kayla's fine. Do you know why they said that? Because Kayla was a massive seller.
Sure, I bet.
She was extremely popular.
She was kind of the Tickle Me Elmo of her day, maybe.
It's so funny. The tagline on the box is, it's amazing what she knows.
Yeah, it is.
It's inherently creepy. I mean, and also, do you remember there was an episode, this is totally Black Mirror territory, there was that episode with Ashley O, you know, played by, what's her name, Miley Cyrus, and she was kind of this sentient doll or whatever, and there's a twist to the story, but also the subject of this email is Chucky, now with Bluetooth, and when they updated the Child's Play movies, what do you think they did? They did exactly this. They made it a Bluetooth-connected friendship doll companion thing that, you know, gets hacked and becomes a murderer.
Advertising is like Wu-Tang. It's for the kids. Also, I had shouted that out earlier too. It's amazing what she knows, which is at the bottom of the box. But there's a second thing, which is like a comic book
speech bubble.
Yes, that says, "I know so much about you." This is the kind of thing that would make me leave a store. Actually.
Yeah, it's super weird. Oh, but it's kid safe, guys, because there's a logo on the bottom that says so. So it's fine.
It does. Don't worry about it. It does say it's kid safe. Well, this is just something I want to remind us as we're thinking about this. We are all now used to the Amazon and Google and all the other devices in our homes that just listen to us at all times and, you know, respond when we address them. But Google Home didn't come out. It wasn't released until 2016. This thing came out in 2014. So it's an early adopter of this kind of technology where you can just say things to it and ask it questions. It then queries, you know, Google or the internet and comes back with an answer. This thing, Kayla, looking at you with these eyes that I'm looking at right now on my screen that I'm feeling very uncomfortable about, she's just talking to you. and telling you all the answers that you have as a child. And if we go back to that BBC article, I just want to talk about, I think it's called Vivid Toy Group. They were the ones who distributed Kayla, my friend Kayla, or Princess Kayla, my friend Princess Kayla, whatever. She has all kinds of AKAs. They released some statements back in 2017 that were just saying, yes, we're aware of this kind of abuse of our technology, right? Hacking that has occurred. These are isolated incidents. Nobody needs to worry about this stuff. It's not a big deal. They were just, you know, one-offs. But then, of course, when the Federal Network Agency comes back through and says, no, 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 y'all, we gotta kill Kayla with fire. You know, it's pretty serious.
Agreed. I mean, to say the quiet part out loud, this is a new avenue of espionage, quite potentially, right? I'd be surprised if it didn't happen. The Bluetooth stuff is relatively insecure. You could also just imagine how many high-level conversations parents have around their children, right? You know, maybe there's a kid playing with their Kayla doll while the parents are talking and one of them works at an embassy somewhere. Oh, hey, how was your day at work? Ah, these Russians again. Crimea is going to be a thing in a few years and no one's listening, and Ukraine will be a thing as well. Like, that information could be valuable and it could be very easy to find. I don't know, man. Surveillance in children, surveillance via children is an effective and, in my opinion, highly unethical strategy. Like, consider how much YouTube algorithms learn, right? There are a lot of parents who have to, you know, you want to distract your kid for a second or get them to sit still and focus, and then they're in the hands of a video service that has its algorithms tuned to what they like, creating a feedback loop. It's crazy.
You kind of indicated this at the top of the story, Matt, but Bluetooth is notoriously vulnerable, right? In terms of, like, you know, a way in to people's systems.
Yeah, especially when it was, you know, early on the
early days.
That isn't necessarily early 2016, but, you know, with every update, more things get fixed, right? More vulnerabilities with any software and or hardware that you're dealing with. What is it? That same agency told Süddeutsche Zeitung Daily that Kayla, quote, amounted to a concealed transmitting device, which was illegal under an article of the German telecoms law.
Oh, wow.
How big do you think Kayla got in Vienna before it got shut down? Withdrawn.
That's what happened. Somebody from the agency received one as a gift or something and was just playing with it, and then realized, like, in some moment late at night after her daughter had gone to bed, and she's sitting there, you know, just looking at the thing and trying to figure it out. And then it just starts talking to her, and it's somebody from the opposition. I don't know.
Yikes. It was the same with, like, those kind of Bluetooth nanny cams or whatever, or anything that's, like, broadcasting on that type of more or less open, you know, frequency, I guess you could call it. You can intercept those super easily and monitor a feed coming out of one of those cameras, or you could broadcast onto them, you know?
Yeah. Dangerous stuff. Thank you so much, Tall Pockets, for reaching out to us and sending us this just fascinating story. I will now be forever horrified by that face of my friend Princess Kayla. Congratulations. We'll be right back with another message from you. Not you, Tall Pockets. Sorry, we did your thing, but you.
Maybe Kayla.
Oh, God.
And we're back with another piece of mail, or correspondence, whatever you want to call it, from you, the public, the conspiracy realists of the world. And this one is also about privacy in terms of money, cold hard cash, or actually cryptocurrency. This message comes from the Fearful Otter? No, not Fearful.
Trusty.
The Trusty Otter, of course. Thank you, Ben. This one comes to us from the Trusty Otter. I'm just going to get right into it. Greetings, gentlemen. After listening to your recent show on money laundering, I pondered about other ways that groups are using to clean their funds. With the boom of cryptocurrency within the past 5 years, The government has no way to regulate these different transactions. Oh, they're working on it, though, aren't they? While all transactions are being recorded in the blockchain and those records will still be there when the government does create some regulation, there are ways around it. I know you mentioned NFTs and how they might be used, but there's still another way. Tornado Cash is one way that is most worrisome. When someone who obtains cryptocurrency, either through illicit activities or lawful ways, they can put some of those funds into this Tornado Cash system. Now they will not be able to remove that money right away. The longer they wait and the more money they put in by others, it makes it very difficult to see whose funds are whose and when they remove them or not. It's like an IOU system. I'm sure I'm missing some of the intricacies of the system as I'm no expert, but this is a basic overview to the best of my knowledge. I definitely see the other use for some people, but with the recent thefts of Ethereum, the kind of system will ensure that those bad actors will just have to wait to cash out. I know that some markets will not allow the sale of these stolen Ethereum, but if they are allowed to put it into Tornado Cash, it is as good as gone. Anyways, I love the show, and the three of you guys always have space in my playlist. Keep those investigations, and look forward to hearing your take on this. Cheers, the trusty Otter. So we don't have to go too much into this, but just a quick refresher. When we say that, you know, blockchain or like, you know, regular cryptocurrency transactions aren't anonymous, it's sort of the way, like, when, you know, we found out all the ways that the CIA were monitoring, you know, phone calls of American citizens, not necessarily with data they could attribute directly to an identity one to one, but they could see all these patterns. They could see this number called this number and that number called that number. And then by analyzing it, you can kind of see repetitions in the patterns and kind of get a sense of who is who, if you even know who one person that you're monitoring is. It's the same with the blockchain. Blockchain, you know, transactions have a unique, you know, key or set of kind of letters and numbers that are associated with whatever wallet they are coming from, you know, to or from. And if you know who one of them is, then over time you can kind of figure out who others are that are, you know, being transacted with. It's called, I guess you'd call it metadata, where it's not directly giving you the identity of the person, although if you are using a cryptocurrency exchange, you do have to have some sort of identification to be, you know, to join that exchange, to buy stuff from it. So it wouldn't be that far of a leap for the government to petition, you know, those organizations to get that information. So there are ways to stay kind of anonymous using cryptocurrency on the internet, but it does require some effort. So it's not inherently, like some people might say or think, anonymous. But with this system, or this standard, I guess, or this, like, you know, app or whatever you want to call it, Tornado Cash, it's correct what Trusty Otter is saying, that it's essentially combining, mixing different transactions so that it doesn't, like, read as a single transaction. And again, I'm not an expert either, but it is something that is a little bit troublesome because it does make it much, much, much more difficult to trace the kind of chain of custody and the, you know, the provenance of these kinds of transactions. So it's definitely something the government would probably not be into. But as we know, legislation hasn't even caught up to cryptocurrency in a way that they can even really do anything about it yet. So these developers out there that are already figuring out ways to deal with the future when regulation does come down, so they can hide their, you know, piles of cryptocurrency away from the government, or at the very least be able to kind of, you know, store them and then cash out away from the watchful eye of Uncle Sam and not have to pay taxes, let alone if this money is being used in black market activities like human trafficking or, you know, serious drug transactions or whatever. So, and it's interesting because this standard or this Tornado Cash is actually launching a much more, you could call it mainstream, kind of like standardized thing on a sub strata kind of the blockchain called Layer 2. That is where a lot of these, like, decentralized finance projects take place on different, like, there's Polygon, there's all these other standards in their L2, which is, like, not the traditional regular blockchain. It's, like, almost like a, you know, if you could look at the web, then you've got the dark web. It's, like, almost like their parallel kind of ledgers that are happening at the same time, but it's a different standard. So essentially they're rolling out something on something called the Arbitrum Layer 2 network that will allow people to directly use this Tornado Cash standard to mask their transactions. It is considered a fully decentralized Ethereum. So that's the basis, you know, that's the coin that you would use to try to disguise these transactions. They're calling it a decentralized Ethereum mixer protocol. And it apparently masks the path that the coin takes from sender to receiver, allowing you to have completely private transactions without the need to use other more kind of privacy focused coins that require you to do a lot more like exchanging, and like you have to pay fees every time you do those. And also layer two networks on this Ethereum standard are very, very fast and have very low fees, while also benefiting from the, you know, security and decentralization that Ethereum, you know, as a standard offers. So this is a little bit troublesome, you know.
There's a great article from Shrimpy Academy that helped break it down for me as someone who's also not an expert on this. We know that blockchain technology can hide your identity, but it cannot hide the trace of transactions. Tornado Right. Cash is what's called non-custodial, meaning that there's not someone who is an overall authority watching. And there's a great example in this article about how simple and foolproof the design of this Tornado Cash thing is. If you are, let's say you, they have a great example in this. Let's say you are tracking down a hacker and this hacker stole something using a specific type of strategy, like a flash loan exploit, which you don't have to get into. You could search for the address that holds the stolen assets using something called Etherscan. And then maybe you find that they use Tornado Cash to launder the money. Your only like real data point is that address and then knowing the amount the hacker stole. And if they're mixing up in Tornado Cash, which is, as you said, Noel, it's a more complex version of a coin mixer, a token mixer, a thing that already existed. But it, so like, let's say you know that they took 50 Ethereum somehow, and then you are trying to figure out how to find it, then you could say, maybe you say, well, let me look at every trade that was for the amount of 50 Ethereum. But if they're clever, they would just do transactions for 10 Ethereum and they would do that five times. And that makes it a much more common transaction. And then it gets mixed up with all these other addresses of people who might have had a similar interaction or transaction, and then it becomes impossible to find the person because they're using something called smart contracts. These accept deposits made in Ethereum, but they get withdrawn to other addresses. So there's no real way of knowing who the original sender is unless you've got some good, you know, I don't know, you've got some outside variables. Yeah, this is tough because it's going to be used for crime, right? We could say that, right? That's like,
I mean, I don't see any other reason for it to exist, right?
Oh no, I hear you guys speaking Latin to me, and all I hear is crime. This is crime. this is always crime. To do crime and get your money in crime. That's literally
your crime,
all I
hear. Your crime money.
Crimes cash. Like, yeah. Okay, great. I know what a blockchain is now. I know that, I guess now you can mix that up and you can get your money out of the blender somehow.
Great. It's like a delightful game of crime twister, you know?
Well, also, I have to wave the flag here. It is possible, you know, if you are coordinating protest in an authoritarian state, if you are attempting to, I'm just listing off possibilities. If you are attempting to escape a situation of domestic violence or something like that with someone who is tyrannically controlling your income, which is a thing that abusive people do, then I'd say there are non-crime uses for this technology. But gotta also have Matt's side on this one. like this is.
I would say those would be the exception and not the rule, right?
Yeah, unfortunately, that's probably accurate. You know, it's interesting because, as you said at the very top of this story, Noel, and as I'm sure you know, Trusty Otter, the regulatory bodies are still kind of like strange cats sniffing this new world of crypto, and they need to figure out how to maintain their status quo. And they also want to figure out, let's be honest, how to make their percentage off it. That's one of their main concerns, unfortunately.
Absolutely.
Both
no question
about industry and banking and public industries like governments. So at this point, though, the tornado already came through. Like this kind of approach, how would you stop it? Like the only way I could see somebody, some institution addressing this in an effective manner, it would depend on new regulations being imposed. So something that says like, okay, if you are in the world of crypto, you have to be somehow registered in some way, which sovereign powers could require people to do that, or they could try. And then you would, maybe it's a thing where certain activities are sus. So like if you use any kind of coin mixing service, you have to answer to some country's version of the alphabet gang. And they're like, hey, noticed you've been mixing your coins. Look back on your social media. So
some real red flags there. No, mm-hmm. It's true. It could definitely become a signifier in and of itself, that activity is going on, and then therefore it could be compel you to justify it in some way. I don't know. Like, again, the technology that the government is using and the legislation is still very, very slow on the draw. I mean, even like I think Biden announced some initiative that was going to start attempting to tax things like NFTs and, you know, crypto holdings. But even that wouldn't go into effect until next year. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I know people that have been in this space for like a decade, mm-hmm. you know, people who have genuinely made fortunes. So what happens when it all comes crashing down, you know? There have to be things in place for folks like that to protect themselves.
Yeah, you got to get out, you know. Well, also that those regulations may happen sooner because the Biden administration has decided that, remember during their campaign, they were like, we're going to cancel student loans. And I think it was last night or today they announced we meant we were not going to do that. So pay up.
So maybe
they're going to get their lawyers on crypto instead. Maybe that's the plan.
Well, it's definitely a plan. But I think our plan for now should be to take a quick break, hear from a word from our sponsors, and then come back with one more piece of listener mail.
And we have returned. Our next piece of correspondence comes from the one and only Dark Sky. Here's what Dark Sky had to say. In your recent listener mail episode about death at Groom Lake, you touched briefly on international arms dealing. This seems like a good time to share something I found quite by accident recently. Out of general curiosity, I was viewing the wiki page for Sears, as in the nearly defunct U.S. retail chain. We know it well, Dark Sky. Somewhere on Wikipedia, I can't find it now, there was a reference to a subsidiary of Sears called Sears World Trade. Long story short, apparently Sears World Trade was involved in international arms deals and possibly providing cover for U.S. intelligence operations. This would have been in the early and mid-1980s. Here's a quote, says Dark Sky, from one of the Sears board members at the time. That name sure seems familiar. We received periodic reports on Sears World Trade as an entire company, but I don't personally remember being briefed on those particular activities, said, as I'm sure you can tell by the voice I'm doing, Donald Rumsfeld, a former Secretary of Defense who was serving on Sears board at the time of the interview. And then Dark Sky goes on to share a couple of links to dig into and concludes with an attaboy for us saying, great show. Keep it up. Thanks so much, Dark Sky, and keep the correspondence coming. Oh, man, you touched a nerve, dude. Sears, the pre-pandemic, the office that we all worked in was an old and historic Sears on another show that our crew does, Ridiculous History. We explored the history of that building and Sears in general. If you are not from the U.S., you may not be familiar with this department store, but in its heyday, it was the Walmart of its time. It was ubiquitous. You could order everything from like shoelaces to guns to entire houses from Sears, and they would just ship it to wherever you happen to be at. So I have to say, I'm surprised we didn't talk about it in our earlier episode, but also at the same level, I don't know how you guys feel. I'm not surprised that Sears was doing this. What about you guys? Initial reactions before we break down what Dark Sky is referencing here.
They were very good at selling things. At least they had people on board who were excellent at that.
Well, they also like invented catalog culture and essentially not only sold things, but sold the concept of the kind of lifestyle you should have that required certain things. You know, they sort of invented like the American dream and sold it to the American people, essentially.
Well, and in this case, if your lifestyle is, you know, being a warlord or, you know, running a military in a different country that maybe doesn't have access to a ton of weapons manufacturing, they did a good job showing them what life could be like.
Yeah. Yeah. Fingers on a hand, as we've said before, the higher you get in any hierarchy, the smaller your circle becomes. And also, at the same time, as counterintuitive as it may sound, you are also more likely to have Venn diagram contacts with other industries, right? Like the average person working in a factory making widgets might not know the person who makes gadgets, but the guy who's in charge of that factory probably does know the guy or the person, excuse me, who runs the gadget factory. That's just an unfortunate side effect of the tribalism of the species. And this is where it gets interesting, because Dark Sky sent us this great article. I feel like this is a fun, I feel like this would be a fun live episode for us to do, but we want to introduce you to the Gucci Mane of this story with Sears. This guy named Frank Carlucci. If you're a fan of reading about U.S. politics and you can get really deep in the weeds, you might remember this guy as the national security advisor for a time to former President Ronald Reagan. After Carlucci left his job as the national security advisor, he got hired on at Sears to run this subsidiary, the Dark Sky mentioned, Sears World Trade. Sears World Trade. Let's just unpack these Matryoshka dolls here. Mm-hmm. Sears World Trade had its own subsidiaries. And one of those subsidiaries, this thing it oversaw, had the name International Planning and Analysis Center Incorporated. A name that is just beige and blasé enough to be suspicious. Who was in charge of that? Who was in charge of that center? A retired four-star general named James Allen, along with 12 other former military officers. They provided this subsidiary of a subsidiary of Sears. Look at those proxies. Admire those nesting dolls. They provided advice on how to sell anti-aircraft missiles, how to sell transport planes or flight simulators, radar, and trailers to the U.S. and Canada. So they were talking with private industry like defense manufacturers, and they were pulling contacts, which is what a lot of the public service folks who go to the dark side, that's what they end up doing. Their nepotism is their CV, their resume, you know?
I mean, what we have on paper here, at least over the span of time since this was going down in it was the 80s, correct, Ben? This mm-hmm. is when
yeah
this
that's happened. Correct.
You know, I'm making references to warlords and, you know, selling weapons in other places that may be enemies of Western powers or something like that. But in this case, they are talking about the U.S. and Canada. When we know about something like this, I always have the suspicion that it goes deeper and it goes further out to more nefarious things, that doesn't necessarily mean that it's true, just because I feel that way. Just putting that out there.
I feel you, man. That's a fair, like, gut check that everybody has to. What do we do in D&D? You got to roll initiative and you got to roll for constitution. You have to make sure that we're not going too far down a rabbit hole of conjecture versus a rabbit hole of fact. But there's a lot of stuff that doesn't look good for this. One of the main things being that when this story broke in the mid-1980s, I think around 86 or so, when this story broke, Sears' response was, it's a small part of the company and we're going to sell it anyway. We might sell it to some other company. Okay, we might sell it to the people who run it now, which is chef's kiss. But then there was also the second aspect of sketchiness here is the deniability factor. Rumsfeld said, I don't remember doing that. And people at Sears were like, oh, was that what that subsidiary was doing? They're just so small. I didn't know about that. Yeah, that's crazy. which is kind of like iHeartMedia saying, podcast, huh? That's wild. We didn't know we didn't know our podcasting arm was doing podcast. Anyway.
What? That's what they're doing down there in Atlanta?
Huh. Ben, what was the name of the division again?
The name of the first subsidiary is Sears World Trade. The name of the subsidiary that was doing the international arms trade consulting is International Planning and Analysis Center Incorporated, or IPAC.
Which is clearly a subsidiary of Illumination Global Unlimited, right?
Well, clearly. That's our show, folks. Thanks so much for tuning in. No, I'm just
kidding. Yeah, yep, we shouldn't be talking about this.
No. You're right. You're on the money. Well, they're involved in pretty much every company, I think, at some point again. But this is fascinating because if you're interested in the history of Sears, please do check out that Ridiculous History episode. But also, I think this is indicative of just how much of a reach this place had. And it, to me, okay, so I'm torn, # Natalie Imbruglia. I'm wondering, like, what is the primary player in this Sears World Trade situation? Was it Sears making a lot of money? I would imagine not. I think it made less than 1% of their sales for quite a while. What it seems to me like, and this is without doing an episode on this, what it seems to me like is some shady consulting was going on and it had the Sears brand name attached as kind of a cover or, like a sheep pelt for a wolf. What do you guys think? Am I off base there?
I feel like you're right on the money. I'm looking down at the bottom of this Washington Post article titled Carlucci Supervised Arm Advisors at Sears. It's from 1986. Yep. Going down all the way to the bottom of it. And it's exactly what you're referencing. They're talking about Sears World Trade's revenue, Sears Robux, which, you know, the above them, and then IPAC. Total revenue at Sears Roebuck was $40.7 billion in 1985. And then IPAC only made $3.5 million.
Only.
Well, I mean, but think about that. $3.5 million is a huge amount of money in 1985. But think about the difference, like you're talking about. This tiny little arm, this thing within a thing, made that small amount. You can only imagine that it exists there for a reason that they haven't stated, in my mind. For them to keep around a thing that's that small and not divert those resources somewhere else where they can clearly be making lots more money, lets me know, or at least sets off my alarms that this is important to them for some other reason.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah, man. And there's another piece to the puzzle. This is not quite the bow on the Christmas gift, but let's call this the wrapping for the present. Dark Sky, you also sent in a great article from The Nation, which is one of the first things that popped up to me as well. And this article is from 2002, and it talks about the further adventures of our man, Frank Carlucci. He's so Carlucci right now. He went on from Sears World Trade and IPAC to become the chairman of a returning guest on our show, the Carlyle Group fellow conspiracy realist.
No.
Yes. Zero poop involved. This is true.
Wow.
So.
Oh, man. Carlucci runs deep.
So let's check this out. So if you want to learn more about the Carlyle Group, I mean, you can go to their official website. If that's, you know, if you're into airbrush art, go to their website and read their About Us. If you are into learning more about the controversy, check out a Wired article from 2010 by Spencer Ackerman, which talks about the reach of the Carlyle Group, because the Carlyle Group, amongst their many other things, it's not been officially censured for this, but there's compelling evidence or circumstantial evidence that they're also deep in the arms trade. And before Carlucci went to the Reagan administration and cabinet, and before Carlucci went to Sears, and before Carlucci went to the Carlyle Group, he had a job at another company, the company. At least that's what we call it on this show. So from CIA to the executive branch to your favorite department store, if you were alive, you know, if you were alive during its heyday, to an incredibly powerful global investment firm, it's just more and more, I'm wondering, like, who is really voting in this country? By which I mean, who is affecting the decisions of policy? And it's so hard not to be cynical. You know what I mean? It's so hard not to think that these are fingers on a hand. And I'm not saying this is how everything works, but I'm saying in this case, I think Dark Sky is onto something. I think Sears just got caught up because their name looked clean, you know?
Dude, there's so many dots to be connected here. I need a conspiracy board.
Yeah. Yeah. You kill it at the conspiracy boards, though. You're amazing at that.
Oh, I can mock them up to shoot them on video for sure. I can make fake ones all day. Let's do it. But I need somebody out there that can actually connect these dots from Rumsfeld and Sears to all of these things.
Whoa,
to Rumsfeld when he brought Carlucci on, and then Rumsfeld when he's in office essentially, hanging out in the upper echelons like you talked about, that those closed circles at the top. I mean, I just want to follow Rumsfeld, and then we'll follow Carlucci. Somebody out there, put those two together.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Carlucci was also, by the way, kicking it with Project for New American Century. Shout out to them. Yep. On the U.S.-Taiwan Business Council. He was a member of the Board of Trustees of the RAND Corporation. I'm telling you, man, it's deeper than rap. It's quote Dead Prez. He was on the Drug Policy Alliance. Ooh, I mean, this guy.
Oh, my God.
This guy had, I don't know if he had many interests, but he had a lot of organizations that he used to push his interest.
He was really on the Drug Policy Alliance?
Yeah, for sure. He was on the Drug Policy Alliance he was a member of the Honorary Board.
Okay.
And that dates back to 2010. He passed away in 2018.
Gotcha.
And, you know, at this point, we cannot ethically draw hard conclusions about what Carlucci's motivations were, you know, or what led him to be connected with so many organizations, some of which remain pretty controversial, I would say, in the modern day. But we can say that there are a lot of dots to connect. This is awesome, Dark Sky. Thank you so much for sending this. I would love to dig in more and see if this is an episode. I think there's something cool about that. But anyhow, that's why we shouted out Sears in the beginning. So we're going to call it a day for listener mail. But I have a surprise for us, Matt, Noel. I mean, it's not really a surprise. I mentioned it off air. But we got an actual letter. I'm covering the address.
Oh, have you looked at it yet?
No, I was waiting for you guys.
So we have no idea what's inside there.
We don't.
A true surprise.
It could be anything.
All right. We just know that our friend Eric sent this. And if you're on our Facebook group, Here's Where It Gets Crazy, then you've heard from Eric. All right. So here we go. Here's the cover. Well, I guess we'll have to narrate this. oh no, this birthday card's late. And it is a dashing looking pig on a motorcycle wearing a helmet, safety first. And the letter reads, we got swag. We got stickers. Okay. The letter reads, Matt, Noel, and Ben, I apologize for this coming later than I expected. I just wanted to say happy birthday to you all. So this is from August, I guess. And thank you for all of the wonderful shows you make. Hope you all have wonderful birthdays. Sincerely, E. P.S. I hope you enjoy the stickers. Just don't fight over who gets which DIA sticker. So we've got, okay, I'll just show you these. And we can distribute these when we hang out off air. But we've got some happy birthday stickers. We got a great project paperclip sticker. I don't know if you can see it.
Mm-hmm.
Very cool. Yeah. And then we've got this bad boy here.
We got a unicorn with its midsection removed, shooting lasers out of his eyes.
It's a unicorn. Denver it's Intergalactic. Blue, right? It's the Denver sculpture from the airport. Yeah. It's the Denver Intergalactic Astropart, established 1995. So we've got these. And thank you so much, Eric. That's so cool, you guys. We got an actual letter.
Yeah, thank you, Eric. That was really kind and really cool stuff. Appreciate the wishes and the stickers. I will take whichever of the three you guys don't want.
Oh, there's so many. Because
I like all of them.
Look at all these.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, we have an embarrassment of sticker riches, and it's all thanks to Eric.
I have an embarrassment of sticker, like hoarded stickers, because I'm in my old age, I'm just afraid of like sticking things on things. Back in my younger years, I would just stick a sticker on anything. Now yeah. I just have piles and piles of unused stickers, but maybe that'll be a New Year's resolution of mine. I'm going to change that behavior. Start sticking up the whole, you know, world.
Some sticker britches. Just put them on them pants.
Were you a bumper sticker guy at one point?
Oh, no, I despise bumper stickers. That is a real pet peeve of mine. But, you know, cool little cutout stickers. And my kid actually just got a really cool electric guitar for her birthday. She just turned 13, and she's already stickering it up. So maybe I'll donate some of these to her cause.
That's good awesome. Call. That's awesome. And thank you again to Tall Pockets. Thank you to Trusty Otter. Thank you to Dark Sky. Thank you to Eric. And thank you to everyone who has tuned in over the years. We can't wait to hear from you, specifically you. If you want to be a part of this show, well, spoiler, you're already a part of the show. But if you want to share a message with your fellow conspiracy realist, let's team up. Let's collaborate. Dare I say, let's conspire. We try to be easy to find online.
That's right. You can find us on the internet. We are on Facebook. We are on Twitter. We are on YouTube under the handle Conspiracy Stuff. On Instagram, you can find us under the handle at Conspiracy Stuff Show.
Yes. And if you want to use your mouth and your phone to contact us, you can dial 1-833-STDWYTK. You will hear Ben's voice, some music, and then you have 3 minutes. Say whatever you'd like and give yourself a cool nickname. We can't wait to say it. Just let us know if we can use your voice and message on the air. If you've got more than 3 minutes worth of things to say and maybe links or some other information you want to share that's more easily typed, instead send us a good old-fashioned email. We are
conspiracy@iheartradio.com.
Stuff They Don't Want You to Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.